Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Tonight, our guest is the director of the Institute for Advanced Physics. He's also a world-class Thomist. That's a student of the philosophy of St. Thomas Aquinas. He gained international recognition in theoretical physics by solving an 80-year-old problem in Einstein's theory of relativity. He has been a senior scientist of the California Institute of Technology's Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory Project, known as LIGO, which won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2017. He is the author of 11 books, which contain important new physics that changes the way we think about everything, including history, which is also studied deeply. He has appeared on various EWTN programs for the past 21 years. He's getting old. The problem is he was all on my shows. I must be getting older. But we're happy to have him back tonight. So please welcome Dr. Anthony Rizzi. Dr. Rizzi,
good
welcome
to be here, Father.
Back.
Thanks.
Good to have you here.
Yeah, it's always fun.
21 years.
Yeah, I can't
You
believe.
Are getting old. And I'm getting older faster.
That's the way time works, right? That's
yes,
physics.
It does.
That's
yes, it does. Well, it's good to have you back.
Good to be here.
This time, you have something that I different from previous topics.
Yes, yes.
On the discussing friendship and love.
Yes, yeah.
Why did you start moving in that direction?
Well,
were you losing your friends? What, are you getting lonely? What?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in working with the Institute, we're really radically changing the way people think by starting with the basic beginning things that you see through your senses. And in so doing, the conclusions that people have come to are shown to be wrong, and so you have to work with people. And as you work with people, you find out all kinds of things of the necessity of friendship, that when you're helping someone understand something, you have to be their friend.
Yeah.
You can't just lecture. You have to be their friend, and you have to, if it's going to be a part of their human life, you have to be with them in it, and you have to be ready to answer their on-the-spot questions and be there for their struggle of this conclusion that makes it so hard to act differently than what you thought. Because you learn something new, and now you have to act diametrically opposed to the way you were trained. Mm-hmm. And then you have people around you. You know, it often happens when people come to the faith. They lose a whole bunch of friends. And that's what happens when they get these deep truths, that they get a bunch of different friends, but they struggle with their friends and family. And so it becomes very important to think about, you know, what does it mean to be a friend, and how do you do that, and how do you help people understand it? And you begin to see the necessity of the community. You know, in our individualistic world, we often forget that we need each other. In what sense do we need each other? That's a question. And the differences of the different types of friendships, and just realizing that, you know, every time we have a topic that the physics changes, when we get the right physics, it changes high-level things like friendship. And we want to bring that out so it can show people, look, you better care about physics, because if you don't care about physics, you won't get friendship right, you won't get politics right, you won't get morality right, you won't get the faith right. Mm-hmm. And so everything we know comes through what we know through the senses. So it's just an opportunity to expand the knowledge that's needed to do the work we're doing, but also to show the need for the physics that, to do that right while you're doing it, because you have to do it if you're going to do it. So that's really how it came about, and I realized that, especially that we haven't made the distinction of the different types of friends according to sex. That's something that's not really been thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And robustly, that, you know, the male-female relationship is sort of the primary relationship, and as most people recognize, in marriage. And so that has to be understood. And then male-male friendships are important, and female-female friendships are important. So that's kind of where it's coming from, where it's going.
I think, though, we're also dealing with a time in our society when the friendship and community and having a sense of belonging is disintegrating.
Right.
And that's another reason that I'm glad that you're talking about this topic. We've seen that for the first time in American history or in Western history, the majority of adults are not married.
Yeah.
That's a first.
Yeah.
And then the majority of children in being born today are born to unmarried couples.
Yeah.
And then you also see that membership in anything is falling apart. It's not only membership in all the denominations and all the churches, but it's also membership in social groups.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, even the Masons are complaining that they can't get anybody to join. But it's true of fraternal organizations like the Moose and Elk and all those. Everybody, because people are so isolating.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a lack of a community that is not just about warm, fuzzy feelings, but a community that shares a vision of reality.
Right, right.
Based
on reality, coming from reality. And you probably know the statistics on this, but friends, the number of people with no friends is very high, that somebody will be asked, do you have a friend? It's very high. Very many people feel completely alone, and they have, as you and I discussed, like the fake friendships of social media, where you put something up to image yourself that you'd like to believe about yourself, or you'd like other people, and they put the same thing up, and there's no human contact. And many people are not experiencing what it's like to be interacting with a person. And the interaction with a person is, well, hopefully we'll get to talk about, as a person, the thing that makes us a person is our intellect and our will. And if you're not engaging the intellect and will of a person, you're not engaging that person.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at this, from what we see. We can talk about the problem, and we can talk about this problem from so many different perspectives that just keep reaffirming what we're saying. I think we should start off with your definition of what love is.
Yes.
When you talk about that. So let me give a quote.
Okay,
I want to take it piece by piece with you.
That sounds good. Can I hold up the article just so people see what we're talking about?
They won't see it.
He has it on the screen.
Yeah, there you go.
Holding up the thing, but he has it on the screen. That's the article we're talking about. He's going to read the definition from that.
Right. See, when you hold it up on the TV, all they see is a white piece of paper.
I know. That's why he did it.
So here's the thing. Love and friendship. Love is seeing through the senses, through the intellect, the good and thus the true in another, and being attracted to it, and wanting and willing to remain with it, and enjoy it, protect it, and grow it, or in it yourself, in the person you loved. Now let's take this piece by piece.
Yeah,
That's a big chunk.
Yeah.
And you don't swallow a whole steak at once.
Right.
So let's take this into bite size. First, love is seen through the senses. This is a very important part of your own vision of how humans know anything.
Right.
We have to be in contact with reality through the senses.
Right. And that's the whole point that I kind of want to start with, is that we know through the senses. You know, everything we know comes through what we know through the senses. I'm saying it, but it's just a fact. And it's not a fact that most people think about, because our physics has become an equational physics that distances most people from our understanding of the physical world. Because physics simply means the understanding of the physical world. And that is an equation now. And so most people are distant from what we mean by the physical world. And so we forget that everything we know, including the faith, starts with what we see, what we hear, what we touch.
If I may, something that a lot of our viewers would be familiar with is the television comedy series and reruns now called The Big Bang Theory, in which you see one character who is doing that. How many times you'll have a board with all of these, you know,
equations.
And most of us who are not familiar with the meaning of the individual components, let alone the whole equation, are perplexed. And he sits contemplating, thinking, and he's just, you know, but at the same time, that character, Sheldon, regularly shows disdain for experimental physics that, or the other sciences that look at concrete things. And I think he, in a certain way, encapsulates this. He wants the equations, but contact with the concrete reality through the senses is something beneath him.
Right, and that kind of...
That would be a caricature, but
the caricature,
not too far.
But it does capture the fact that we are equation... As physicists, we think in terms of equations. And when we're talking to you, we're trying to explain how we think about the equations in ordinary language. But what the end result is that we have a understanding of the physical world that's radically incomplete, and that means all of the subjects, history, English, the faith, theology, whatever, is all radically reformed by this incomplete and even wrong in some areas physics, where we don't think about what things are, but we think about how to organize them. And so that's back behind why we really haven't had an in-depth definition of friendship. You know, I wrote an article called Why Christianity Has Become a Myth for Modern Man, and somebody suggested I should write an article, Why Friendship Has Become a Myth for Modern Man. And it's because of a neglect of the proper understanding of the physical world, and we have to get that understanding back so we can, again, care about each other, because so many people don't. I want to read, before we go further, I'd like to read something that Pope Francis wrote in his recent encyclical, Deluxit Nos, where he's talking about, well, I'll read just a paragraph here. Instead of running after superficial satisfactions and playing a role for the benefit of others, we would do better to think about the really important questions in life. Who am I? Who am I really? What am I looking for? What direction do I want to give to my life and my decisions and my actions? Why and for what purpose am I in this world? And how do I want to look back on my life once it ends? What meaning do I want to give all my experiences? What is that meaning? Who do I want to be for other people? Who am I for God? These are questions that lead us back to the heart. And that's kind of what the definition is trying to, what my definition is doing, which is bringing it all together as the whole person, that when you love somebody, it's the whole person. It's not simply the will. It's the whole person. It's the truth in the other person that you're seeing through the senses, through the intellect. So when I look at a person, I can see that person, but if I'm properly educated and properly formed, I can see through the exterior to the interior of that person by talking to that person, by listening to that person, and growing in the understanding of that person.
Oftentimes when we when we see somebody, that we have a certain kind of attraction that, oh, that person looks fascinating. I would like to talk to them, and maybe we have something in common.
Yes.
A lot of times we do not.
Right.
When we start to talk, many times we do, and we become friends if we do, and if we keep up the contact.
Right.
But that is through speaking to them, listening to them.
Right.
That comes through the senses.
Right.
And that's a very important part. So that's a key part. It's love is seen through the senses. But your second part of that is through the intellect.
Exactly.
What role does the intellect have here?
So that's the thing that we've lost because of the fact that we have this equation alone physics. We see things as symbolic of something else. We never see into them. But that's not the way your mind works. The mind works by, and it sees something, it always sees the what. Mm-hmm. As well, because you can't just see with your senses as a man. You always see through the senses, through the intellect. And so you're always seeing intelligible content. The question is it true? And is it actually in the thing? Because what our minds do is they focus on something else besides what's in front of us. And it's especially evident in, for example, the difference between men and women that we're taught to just be blind to. So we don't see what's in front of us, we see somebody's story. And that's the openness that the Pope is talking about, be open to the other, to be open to the meaning of the other, and then a mutual, and a friendship, as I define in the article, is to love each other, is two people that love each other in truth and their mutual growth, love each other in the truth and their mutual growth in it. And so that mutuality grows, we grow each other in that truth, and differently from men, male-male relationship versus male-female relationships, for example, but nonetheless growing in truth. And that centeredness is what's required to see, properly see what's in what's presented to the senses, right? So the beauty of a woman, for example, properly expresses something about her person, but you have to let the intellect travel into that person to see something of that woman. You can't just rest as if the senses didn't reveal to you through the intellect something intelligible about that person. So, you know, I had a psychologist call me once. I wanted to tell you how much I love your book. It's great. And he said, yeah, people come into my classroom and they say, and I talk to them and I say, I don't see your color of your hair or your height or anything. I see the person. And I had to say to him, so which of the five senses is the sense of person? There is no sense of person.
Exactly.
It's through the inanimate powers that we directly presented to the senses that we learn about everything. So that's a complex process to see through the person. And so that's a maturation that has to happen for each person to learn how to be a friend. Mm-hmm. And I encourage, like, you know, parents to help their children understand that that's one of the major tasks of life. It's a central task of life, is to find out how to get friends and how to be a friend and how to help your friends grow in truth towards each other.
There are a couple things. One, on the negative side of this, the opposite of what you're describing, back about 25, 30 years ago, I was, no, about 30, 35 years, again, time's going quickly. I did a lot of research into a personality type system that was very popular, called the
Myers-Briggs?
Enneagram.
Okay.
No, Enneagram.
Okay.
But Myers-Briggs would be another example of something that it would categorize people into certain types. And one of the concerns I had is that for the people who knew this, it often became a case, well, you number one types are like this, yeah. You number fours. Again, it made a personality into an equation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of engaging in friendship,
yeah,
where the person freely shows who they are.
Yeah.
They give themselves information about themselves,
yes,
and you can accept or reject it, and you can observe it, and your intellect can help to understand. But if you go to a typology system,
yeah,
of there's nine personality,
yeah,
types, and we know them, and I know them, and I know which one you are.
Yeah.
Oh boy, you people!
That's what you've got.
That's when you have made a theory.
Yeah.
And an equation, better,
yeah,
yet.
And,
you,
yeah,
made an equation of a person,
yeah,
instead of dealing with an actual person.
And so the intellect, instead of focusing on the thing, in this case, your friend, focuses on the theory or the system,
yes,
that you're trying,
exactly,
to classify,
exactly,
someone. So you don't no longer see, in a proper understanding, you don't see the understanding itself, you see the thing.
Yeah. And the part where you're saying about parents,
yeah,
this is very important, because on one hand, a mother and a father, prior to having children, need to be engaging in that specific kind of friendship that a man and woman in love have,
yeah,
so that they also, through their senses, really perceive,
right,
and through the intellect,
yeah,
understand each other,
yes,
and not merely say, oh, I know what you're like. You always do the same thing.
You know, I read you like a book.
Yeah. And that's always a bad sign in a marriage. When I know what he's going to say before he opens his mouth. It's the same thing over and over. That's bad. It's learning to do. So the parents who live that before a child is born are actually modeling what it is like. And then again, you have how many children?
Four.
Yeah. And are, what, the first three are just all alike?
No. All of them are very different.
Absolutely.
Every very different,
And you engage them each child
individually,
and say, you don't form their personality. They come out with the personality.
Yeah. Right.
You engage that personality.
Yeah.
That's where you, again, you're using your senses to see how this kid is and your mind, your intellect, to understand what this means.
Right, right.
This is, you got to model it for kids by living it.
You live it and then it grows into the community. And it's why friendship demands, and there's so many more ways of doing it now, but it demands presence.
Yes.
You know, and later in the definition, I come to that.
Well, let's take a look at that. We'll go back to the definition. So this is where you also see that another part of what you said in your definition is that love is inextricably tied to friendship.
Right. But in the definition, it says that, you know, that through the senses, through the intellect, you see the good and thus the true.
Yes. We want to make sure we get that.
So
that's what the intellect and the senses perceive.
Yeah.
The good.
The good, right.
And that person.
Yes.
That is also the truth, that what is true in that person.
Right, what's true, because the good attracts the will and the emotions if the intellect properly sees it. And so that's the next part of the definition, that you're attracted to it. Because if you're not attracted to it, something's disordered. When you see a good thing, you should be attracted to it. And it's the truth in it that attracts you, because the intellect is the way that you understand the thing, and in understanding, you see the good in it. But if you don't have proper understanding, you can miss a good right in front of your face. And so it's a work, it's a process. As you can think, if you think about it, the five senses, none of them, as I told the psychologist, are the sense of person. So you have to work through those inanimate powers, white and yellow and different colors and different sounds and so forth.
Different smells, different
feelings.
Smells actually something that anchor. You know, I can walk into someone's kitchen, and I'll often think of my mother's kitchen, the same kind of food being cooked, or my grandmother's kitchen. And it awakens a whole world of things
that you wouldn't have thought about before that.
Right.
And then but the point is that if you think about that for a moment, that's pretty profound, because where is the intellect and the will and the person in that smell of your mother? It takes a lot of work for a child and a man and a person to grow, a boy to grow up into a man, a girl to grow up into a woman, to learn how to see a person. That's an intellectual work that we've been skipping, and it's a formative, and a lot of it is, as you just said, is the watching your mother and father, but it's also watching other men and women behave as men and women, behave as men and man, and in that you learn what you're really seeing through the senses, because you're seeing stuff, you're seeing things, and there's behaviors and motions and stuff that only go with the person, and as you see into that, you become to understand it, and as you understand it, you're attracted to it. Now, what you wanted to be clear on is that it's true, and that's why it's so important. The standard, what might be called the standard definition to will another good, is not sufficient, because it doesn't remind you that truth is the standard of whether it's good. And then you have no way to check. Okay, I'm attracted to that. It feels good to me, but it may be false. And then I'm attracted to something I believe is a good, but it's actually not.
Yeah,
and then I'm trapped.
This is something where, again, we can think of how children have to grow. They're very attracted to sweets into salts.
Yeah.
But as attractive as they might be to the taste, you know, we, especially as we get older, the salts cause blood pressure to go up and the sweets cause diabetes. Yeah. You know, that as attractive as they might be, they're good in certain amounts,
yeah,
but not even as the majority of what
right.
you eat.
But my point about friendship is though, to really understand your friend and the people around you more generally, you have to have grown into being able to see through what you see through the senses and then see correctly the truth in that person so you're properly attracted to the true good in that person. Mm-hmm. And you see the true beauty in that person. So many people watch ugly shows and they think they're great because they have a misunderstanding of what beauty is because they have a misunderstanding of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because truth is the thing that's attractive to us, and that's why truth is so important in that definition. Because otherwise you have no way of figuring out that you're trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else can come in and say to you, well, have you considered this? You know, maybe mm-hmm. this isn't good. Here's the reason why. Well, no, it's good because I'm good with it. So you're trapped in your own attractions. And it's so important to make that explicit so that you can see that it's a lot of work to understand the person. Don't jump to think, I know how that guy works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
And this again is
before.
Where the parents, you know, when they act like a friend, that doesn't mean that, oh, I want, you know, I just love you.
Whatever you
just,
do, yeah.
No,
fine, no.
This is part of the process of helping a child correct
right.
intellectually their perceptions. Mom is not simply the maker of cookies.
Right, right.
She is a person with her own truth and goodness, and she has to be part
right.
of correcting misperceptions
right.
that would encourage a child's selfishness.
Right, right.
And so being a friend to a child doesn't mean that you're just always
right.
really nice.
And it
means correcting false perceptions.
And that's exactly right. And so one of the things I point out in the article is that there's different types of friends, different analogical types of friends that are very different from each other but share the same definition, analogical definition. But no type of friend is you do whatever you want and I don't care, because as you see the next part of the definition, did you want to...
Yeah, let's
that.
See if I can get that back on the screen here. That it's seeing through the seeing the good and thus the true in another, being attracted to it, and wanting and willing to remain with it and enjoy it.
Let's stop there. If we
okay.
can. So we're attracted to it because we see that it's good, and we want to. And then once we see that it's good, we make the decision. I'm gonna stay with it, and what we have to do is find out what our place is, an intellectual structure to the world. Some people are smarter, some people are less intelligent, but they have knowledge that only they possess in a way that can channel it to someone else. Everyone is a part of the whole, but each person has a place in which he thrives, and our job is to find that place in which we thrive and accept the people above us and the people below us intellectually and contribute in that way. And that way, what we have to contribute will be passed around to everybody, and it becomes a true common good because we're a part of the whole.
Yes.
And that's how we discern it. You know, so each level of friendship, depending on who you're supposed to be friends with, the intensity of the friendship depends on whether they align with what's supposed to be happening at that moment. And so when you see the good and you see that's in your proper place, then that person starts becoming one of your better friends.
Yes.
And that person then takes on a special role in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the article really leaves aside that distinction and mostly tries to talk about what I call non-procreational relationships so that we can establish what it's like before you get to the specification of marriage. Because marriage is the most deep and highly specified form of friendship, and it's between a man and a woman. And I talk about what a man is and what a woman is in the article, and don't think we have time to go into all that now, but that creates a dynamic between a man and a woman that already exists. And this is one of the new things in the article, to talk about non-procreational friendships, that there are two types of male-female friendships. There's the non-procreational friendships, which are not ordered towards procreation and don't develop an inward tilt towards nesting. Man and woman go through the relationship, through the truth, directly to the world in non-procreational. In procreational-oriented friendships, which includes dating that's oriented towards marriage, go through the relationship towards children, and the truth comes out in children. And that's our goal as parents, is to incarnate our love of our wife into the truth that we have into the children, and the children transmit it to the world. And that's absent from non-procreational friendships. Most people are meant to have very light non-procreational friendships with, but nonetheless, it's a qualitatively different thing, a friendship between a man and a woman and a man and a man. And we've left
not. Or a woman and a woman.
Or a woman and a woman. Mm-hmm. And those are three different types. I say that for the first time, there's a generic type of friendship, but then the immediate specification are those three, and they're qualitatively different because a man is, the relationship between a man and a woman is action and reception. And that makes it, those are the powers, the sort of rudimentary powers that hold the world together, because that's where love comes in. And love is kind of the highest level thing that you have, because in seeing the truth, if you don't love it immediately and go after it, you don't get any more. And you don't get to own that truth. There's an analogy in the faith that, you know, you say faith without charity is dead. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't love what the truth of what you see in the faith, then your heart is dead. And it's what the Pope is talking about. You don't have that heart to grow in it, to go into the complexity and the level, the new levels that are just revealed at the opening of that. Yeah. And, you know, St. Augustine has this great quote that, because I want to really connect love with truth. He says, nothing conquers but truth. And the victory of truth is love.
Yeah.
Nothing conquers but truth. And the victory of truth is love.
In a world like ours, which challenges whether truth even exists, or the challenge, if it does exist, nobody can know it.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a stance that misses this whole reality.
Yeah.
And in fact, ends up missing love itself. It's no surprise in a world that doesn't love truth that there's very little friendship, less and less marriage, and that kind of friendship, less and less family.
Yeah.
We need truth in order to have love. We need to take a little break.
Okay.
We're going to come back. If you want to find out more about Dr. Rizzi's work in the Institute for Advanced Physics, you can go to iapweb.org. iapweb.org. That's the Institute for Advanced Physics.
And the article is there as well.
And the article is there too. You can take a look at it in its entirety.
And a podcast on this subject.
Okay. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes, so please stay with us. Welcome back. Now, before we get back to discussing with Dr. Rizzi, I want to let you know about his TV miniseries, which is called Decision for Truth. This is something that he made with a member of the EWTN Theology Department. A lot of you know him, Mr. Noah Lett. And it's available to watch anytime on our on-demand page. All I have to do is go to the website ondemand.ewtn.com. ondemand.ewtn.com. Let's take a look at a clip from that miniseries.
What does physics have to do with the truth?
Physics is the study of the physical world, and the truths of the physical world are the first truth we need to get to any other truth.
Dr. Rizzi brings his expertise as a physicist and as a good Thomist.
I chose to be involved in this series because without this, our culture will continue to fail, and good people are starving for it, and they need it.
This show is going to bring you things you've never heard before. It's going to change the way your family lives and the way you live. Join me as I have a conversation with the author of The Science Before Science, A Guide to Thinking in the 21st Century, Dr. Anthony Rizzi, who will make the case for truth.
Our culture is in need of radical reform at the base, and you, by watching, will be part of that reform.
Right. Well, good. Good job. Thank you for making that series with Noah. You ready for a phone call?
Yeah, sure.
Let's start off with Anastasia, who is calling from Ohio. Anastasia, what can we do for you?
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When I was younger, and I'm in my 70s, maybe I didn't notice, maybe it was always around, but it seems like now young people, like girls and guys, they used to be able to be really have best friends, like the girls had like their little clique of girlfriends and the guys had their cliques. But now everything is so sexualized. I mean, it seems like girls, I don't know if they don't trust the boys anymore or whether there's things going on that I'm not aware of, but it seems like girls, when they feel close to each other, they sexualize it, or guys do the same thing. And I just wondered, what causes that, if there's something going on that I'm not aware of, or what do you suggest could possibly be a solution to help young people realize they can be close, they can care really deeply about each other, and it doesn't have to be sexualized?
Okay.
Yeah. That's a really good...
Yeah, that's a very good observation, Anastasia. It really is occurring. There was, just as an example, same-sex relationships in the 40s involved about 1% of the population. Today, it's about 20% are identifying as either homosexual, same-sex attracted, or bisexuals. They say interested in both. And up to 45% engage in some version of sexual contact with the same sex.
Yeah.
There's statistical evidence showing that what she's saying is occurring.
Yeah. Now,
what's going on, do you think?
So that's really a good insight to talk about, because it has to do with the fact that, and we can see by the way we use sexuality, the way I describe it in the article, sexuality means to us the procreative act, and then it means a mechanical manipulation of that act. It doesn't mean anything human really anymore. And and sexuality is much broader than that. When every action I do from the moment I'm conceived is an action as a man. Every action a woman does is an action as a woman. So we're sexualized already by our nature. So we don't want to get rid of that. We want to re-understand it, that we are meant to be in sexual relationships, but they're different. That's why I make the distinction between the three types. The male-female ones have a male-female tone to whatever they are. They're just different levels, because the action-reception powers, like I say, those action-reception powers become the powers of other things. The way the strong force holds the nucleus together, the love of the man and the woman, become those powers become the powers that are used everywhere. And unless we're activating those powers, we confuse them, and then we end up going down the rabbit hole of the procreative act as the terminal mechanical point, and we miss the fact that we are sexual beings. When two men interact, I point out in the article that male-male relationships are side by side. Male-female relationships are face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
Because the action reception creates a relationship. The relationship for two men, you start talking about something, you start arguing, pretty soon a relationship develops. It doesn't work with man-woman. And we've forgotten that. So we used to know that, and girl-girl friendships and guy-guy friendships used to support that and grow that. But instead, everything, the larger meaning of sexuality has disappeared, and we have no way to be man or woman except through that. And so it breaks off our ability to be sexual beings, which we are, and we default to this disorder. Unless we have a room for us, a man to act like a man with a man to act like a man with a woman. Unless that psychologically is different and we're not allowed it, then we don't get that deep interaction that we crave as human beings, because that's the way we know. The way we get to truth is through our sexuality. There's no other way, because that's the physics of the situation, right? The physics meaning the physical body. We have physical bodies, and that conditions the way we think. Mm-hmm. And women think from a receptive point of view, and men think from an active point of view. So many people falsely attribute maternity and paternity as the definition of male and female, and that's not right, because we're ordered, paternity and maternity are ordered towards bringing truth to the world, but first and foremost, male and female are there to bring truth to each other and then through the world. And it's how we learn in our families those things, the male-female, that we learn how to be male-male friends, and we learn how the women learn how to female-female friends. And until we get that bigger understanding, the word sex no longer simply means the procreative act at the mechanical endpoint, there's no way to be human. We have to pretend we're some kind of spiritualized being that doesn't have bodies. And we're not, and we have to get that back. You know, there used to be a lot of things in the culture that brought that out. Men held doors for women. Men escorted women. Men were very careful the way they behaved. They were extra polite around women.
One of the things that's a sign to me of the breakdown is the way that vulgar language is used by men in front of women, but also
women
by
use
women.
It now. Yeah.
Yeah, by women. And in one sense, there was a more civilizing factor. Growing up, the idea of using vulgar language in front of any female, yet alone your mother or anybody, you know, that was just, you know, that's a kid. I saw the picture of dead meat along with that, next to that concept.
You being the dead meat.
Yes, I being the dead meat. So you just didn't do that.
But there was a respect for the masculinity and femininity, the psychology of it, the need for men to be the leaders, women to be the receivers of that leadership, and acceptance that that's okay. Women want that, men want that, it's okay. And that it's many ways that the culture manifested it and showed that, but we have to realize that it's oriented, we need each other to get to truth. And if less that focus is happening, then all the issues with the masculine feminine attraction can lead to that direction. And so many people are afraid of that. Instead of harnessing that energy and saying that that's a good that can be harnessed to grow us in truth, and that the wideness of women can augment the logic of men, and men can form the all the great insights of women. And it's a whole project that, with a civilized world like ours, that we're called to now, that people couldn't do it at the level we can do it because they didn't have the wherewithal. You know, but way back when, they had to survive. Mm-hmm. Men and women worked together, masculine and feminine, in masculine and feminine ways, because they had to survive, but they didn't get to do the high-level things that we have the leisure to do, and we're not doing them. What are we doing? We're playing on our phones instead of getting to know our neighbors and getting to grow in truth with the people around us and allowing our sexuality to grow. But our use, we can see just by the word, the way we use sexuality, it does mean the procreative act ending and turning into a mechanical activity that isn't human.
Well, I think the two things that I want to add to that, too. One, we have to remember that when we talk about the difference between the sexes, it's not just about a few organs associated with procreation.
Right, exactly.
It is a component of every single cell in each person's body.
Right.
Every cell in your body and mine has XY chromosomes.
Right.
Every cell in a woman's body has double X chromosomes.
Right.
It's in the toenails. It's everything.
Yeah. Right.
And one of the problems is that the society has isolated the organs for procreation and nourishment into the sexual organs.
Right.
And they think they can play with that, and then you change a man and woman.
Mm-mm. And
that is missing the senses. What you talked about in terms of love through the senses, that's a false use of the senses.
Right, right.
And the second thing, too, I would add about this sexualization aspect brought up by Anastasia is that the mechanization of sexuality that you talk about is something that was very much encouraged by the use of the birth control mm-hmm. that says, I'll give you my sexuality, except the part that makes it allows it to have babies.
Yeah.
You know, that I will make it a tool for one aspect of pleasure, but not for its yeah. you know, purpose for procreation.
Yeah.
That has given a myth of there being no consequences to my sexuality,
yeah.
even though now 20 to 25% of the population has sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah, and all different new ones that we never had before.
Right. It used to be two
yeah.
when we were kids, and it keeps escalating.
Yeah. But so I wanted to point out, though, that we got to be careful about the XY definition, because
we don't
see XY, and very few people know what it even means. And that kind of
right.
jumping to the modern science is what we have to avoid in a lot of ways, because it's there present psychologically. If we're present to a woman and we're talking to a woman, you can see her different ways of responding. Because of her receptivity, she has a vulnerability that men have to be very careful of.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's receptive in a way that we're not. And so we have to be careful what we do, and that's part of the way people used to behave. And that's evident if you pay attention to it.
Yes.
And that's what I find with a lot of people. What you're saying, it makes sense, but I don't see it. And I say, and I start giving them examples. What does your mother do? What would your father do? Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. They never think about what they actually see. They think about this science that they didn't do
yeah.
well in,
yeah.
and they use it as an explanation. Yeah. I had to tell a young woman once, she said, how do you know you're male or female? Have you seen that? You think that's how I know? Let me see your credentials then. If that's how I don't know you're a woman yet, let me see your credentials.
Yeah.
Just by looking at her, first of all, but also by talking to her. Mm-hmm. If you're paying attention, you can see you're talking to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a difference. And we've lost that. That's sex. Sex is not simply the procreative act.
Right.
And it's not simply stuff science you don't understand. It's something that people have understood implicitly. But mm-hmm. what we're called to as men is to make things more explicit, make that more clear with time, more like with the faith. You know, we understand transubstantiation and the Trinity better than mm-hmm. the apostles, because we've meditated it on as church, and the smart people have told us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're called to do that with sexuality, mm-hmm. and we have the ability to educate women in a way that was never done before. And we have to own that. And the same thing with men, is there's all kinds of free time that we can grow in truth with each other in a way we couldn't. And to challenge each other, like you were getting into before, the idea that friendship is just about making each other feel good is just wrong. Because when you see a truth in someone and you see that person jeopardizing that truth, you want to rush in and protect it. Don't
right.
do that.
Right.
Don't do that. It's going to hurt you.
Right.
I don't want you. I want to
right.
keep that truth about you.
That's right.
And I want to remain with you in the struggle to keep that truth.
Right.
And unless you see it, then you don't protect it. Unless you get to know that person, you can't protect it.
We have another caller. Rosemary, you're calling from Pennsylvania. What's your question?
My question is for Dr. Rizzi. I would like to know if maybe he feels that married couples, there is such a high rate of divorce today because married couples are not best friends first.
Yeah. I mean, I would. Can I go
yeah,
ahead?
Yeah, please.
I would say that's exactly right. That's why I think for the first time in the article, I define the non-procreational relationship, because if your sexuality only begins when you enter a procreational orientation relationship, then you're not a man until you have a date or something. And that's not right. Every time you interact with a woman, your manhood comes out in a very important way. And so young people have to be told that they need to become non-procreational friends first. That's a truth-oriented that goes through the relationship, truth back out to the culture. And that's a masculine and feminine thing. And anybody that knows how it feels to be in a relationship with a woman knows what that feels like. And that is not necessarily procreational.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be pretty deep But then you decide, look, I think we're made to go into this next step. And then you make the decision to go into a dating relationship to saying, we're now moving towards marriage. We're now changing. But you have to understand who that person is before you can make the decision to go to orient towards making a place between you for children. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens during dating. And you have to be conscious of that, mm-hmm. that you're wanting to join with this person to make third persons. And that's a beautiful thing that's implicit in it, but you have to make a decision. And to make that decision, you have to see that you're called to that person by their particular truth. And each person is ordered to each other in a different way. And as you get to know that person, you get to know what your orientation toward that person is. And then you can make a decision to start dating. Mm-hmm. And that's what's missing. In a culture like ours, that's much more important than it ever has been, because we have all this leisure. Instead of doing smart things like that, we waste it on not just wasted time, but things that make our minds go nuts about what it means to be in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So much of it is game playing and weird back and forths and drama and stuff. And mm-hmm. If we used our intelligence, and male-male friendships would play a part in this, female-female friendships would play a part in this, forming people to be able to have those non-procreational relationships and then make it truth-oriented. So that when it gets to the procreational orientation, it's truth-oriented in a deeper way, which is what happens in marriage, is you got the deepest sort of truth, the specification of the generic male-female love now reaches its deepest point.
Yeah. We have another caller. We have James in your own state of Louisiana, but he's down in Lafayette. Okay. James, what can we do for you?
Yes, Dr. Izzy, I love your article. I encourage everybody to read it. Your definitions intrigue me, and I think about Jesus' words to his apostles. I no longer call you, I think it's slaves, but now I call you my friends. And that's always intrigued me, and in your article is beautiful. What would you say about that?
So I would really agree with that, that just really lights up what Jesus is saying there, that mm-hmm. that he's transitioning us from the idea that we're just sort of like, here's the command, and he never was like that with us, but we took it like that because of our fallen nature, that here's the command, do something. But he, like any good authority, gives a command so that you will grow in truth. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do when we work with each other and we help each other. We the person who has more understanding gives the understanding, so that person, particular truths can come out in a way that they couldn't come out any other mm-hmm. way. Yep. And Jesus delights in seeing, as he helps us develop, the truths that come out. That's his glory. I mean, it becomes his glory because mm-hmm. it's a reflection of him.
Yep.
You know, Saint Irenaeus says that the glory of God is the man who's fully alive. And that's what it means to be fully alive, is to let the proper authorities in the intellectual hierarchy structure work with you and grow your truth so that you can reflect that glory of God to the world. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's talking about, is now there's this, what he wants this relationship to be is a relationship of growing you in truth, that you trust him. And that's what, you know, the person higher up in the hierarchy says something and you trust it because you see he knows what he's talking about. And then you come to understand it through the trust. And that's what happens with God in spades, is that he has all this understanding that he gives us through the faith. And that if we accept it, then we can see all kinds of things we wouldn't see. And the love of that drives us further, to go further and to become. And one of the problems I think that needs to be brought out is that we want, as C.S. Lewis said, God grandfathers, because we want to be spoiled,
right.
But he's becoming a father, which means he wants us to grow, not just to be, you know, sort of fat, dumb, and happy.
Right. It's no accident that in the same conversation where he says, I no longer call you slaves, but friends, he begins it in chapter 14, verse 6, with saying that I am the truth,
yeah.
and that goes together.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, though, that we've run out of time. If you want more information on Dr. Rizzi's work, visit the Institute for Advanced Physics website by going to iapweb.org, iapweb.org. Thank you for coming all the way from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Good to have you here. And may the Lord bless all of you and lead you in all of your ways by his peace. May he direct your paths towards him in the truth and love that he is. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. And we can bring you Dr. Rizzi and all of our other programs, the podcast that he's got, the show on demand, and so many other programs, because the network is brought to you by you. So please remember to keep us in between your gas bill, electric bill, and cable bill, and we'll be able to pay our bills too. Thank you, and God bless.